If last weekend's event in Atlanta was a preview of what we can expect with the new package that NASCAR is running, and again, they weren't running the full package for that race, I'm pretty excited about what we could see this 2019 season. We saw passes for the lead, we saw good racing, we saw a good race right up until the end, and we saw drivers working their way forward from the back of the pack pretty quickly. And that's exciting both as a NASCAR fan, but also as a DFS player, because there could be a lot of upside in these races. And this weekend, we finally get to see the full new package in action at Las Vegas. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, here to break down the Pennzoil 400 from a DFS perspective, letting you know which drivers are getting my attention for this weekend based on their salaries on FanDuel. Now, as mentioned, last week was not the full package for NASCAR for this full season, for this new season. This week in Las Vegas, they will be using that. And we'll talk more about what that means in just 1 second. But first, a couple of logistical things to mention for this weekend. First practice is Friday at 3:05 p.m. Eastern. The drivers in that one will likely be in qualifying trim, meaning their cars will be set up to run just a short run and then get off the track. We can still learn something from that. We can see which cars are fast, but with the qualifying format being what it is for this year, where they will be able to draft if they want to, I am unsure of what to think about that Friday practice. But qualifying is Friday at 7:40. They will be able to qualify in packs. So I would assume that teams will be sending drivers from the same team out there all together so they can try to go faster via the draft. I would expect that. And we'll see how that plays out. That could benefit the larger teams. But we also could see some flukiness in who starts where, because this format is so different than what we've seen in the past. The two practices on Saturday, I think, are the biggest keys. The first one is at 11:30 Eastern. The second one is at 2:30 Eastern. The second practice will be the better one because the track conditions will be closer to what they'll be during the race. That practice starts at 2:30. The race on Sunday is at 3:30. So I think if you're looking for one practice you want to focus on, it would be the second Saturday practice. And look at the 10-lap averages as opposed to the single-lap speeds, because they're going to be able to draft in Las Vegas this weekend, which means you could catch a car from behind, get a draft off them. That will inflate your speed a little bit, and that could make your one-lap, single-lap speed look pretty good. But over a 10-lap run, things should even out a bit more. So I think if you're looking at Saturday practice speeds, try really hard to focus on the 10-lap averages. In Atlanta, we saw 30 drivers run a 10-lap run, 10 laps consecutively in the final practice. I would expect that number to be about that high in Atlanta this weekend, too. So practice does matter in general, but it matters even more what these drivers do on a 10-lap average as opposed to a single-lap speed. Then lock for the event is Sunday at 3:30, so you'll have a lot of time to digest what you see in practice before you fill out lineups for Sunday's race. Now, before we take a look at this new Aero package and what it means for DFS, gotta let you know that if you want to prove your NASCAR knowledge, give it a shot this week in FanDuel's Intimidator Contest. Entries are just $5.55, and for that, you get a shot at $100,000 in total prizes, with $20,000 going to first place. Second place will net you $10,000, and third place gets you $6,000. If you want to max enter a lower dollar tournament, you can also check out the Bump and Run. It's a fun contest, $2 to enter with 10 entries max, and a flat payout structure. So check out both those and all other NASCAR contests. Go to FanDuel.com and check out the NASCAR lobby for Atlanta. All right, so the track breakdown here. Normally we go through old data at that specific track. For this weekend in Las Vegas, it doesn't really matter because of this new Aero package. Now, what is a new Aero package? If you're new to NASCAR for this year, want to know what exactly it means, last week in Atlanta, they ran smaller tapered spacers. This week, they're adding new Aero ducts as well. The tapered spacers cut down the horsepower from 750 to about 550 horsepower. And that makes the cars drive slower, obviously. The new aeroducts are intended to punch a bigger hole in the air and make drafting more of a thing. They did not run those in Atlanta last week, but they will have them in Las Vegas this week. We've seen at least a version of this package twice so far in the Cup Series. The first one was in last year's All-Star race. There were a bunch of lead changes there, good racing, and they were racing in packs. It looked a little bit like, you know, a diet version of restrictor play racing. The second time we saw this was in a testing session at this very same track in Las Vegas back in January. Jeff Gluck of jeffgluck.com taped that session on his phone, put them up on Periscope. I would recommend digging back through his tweets and finding those. I did link to the third practice session, the drafting session, in this week's track preview on Number Fire, so you can find one of those there, but all of them are pretty impactful, and it's a good, you know, little sampler of what we should expect for the racing to look like this weekend. In the test session, cars were drafting and racing in packs. That's just kind of, you know, the way the package intended, and at least based on that test session, it seems like it was successful. It seemed like the drivers were able to make some passes pretty easily too, even for the lead. Brad Keselowski passed Matt DiBenedetto pretty fast, so this is exactly what we saw in the All-Star race, and it's huge for DFS, because if drivers can make passes for the lead, it could prevent one driver from monopolizing all the laps led. If those laps led are more spread out, it lowers the upside of drivers starting at the front, because that is their big source of upside. If drivers can make passes from the back of the pack and work their way forward, they should be able to finish well, and that's also big for DFS because it inflates the upside potential via place differential. If this sounds familiar, limited laps led and high place differential potential, it should. It is similar to what we saw in the past at Daytona and Talladega. Now, Vegas is not going to be the same as those two tracks. There are 67 more laps in this race than we had in Daytona, which means that there are 6.7 more points available for laps led, and that does matter. And the packs will not be as tightly packed as we saw in those spots in the past. So the ability to pass will be high, but not quite as high as what we've seen at other restrictor play tracks in the past. So not quite the same, but there will be similarities, and that means we should have a similar plan of attack to what we do in those spots for DFS. If you think back to 2 weeks ago in Daytona, our thought process was we wanted to target drivers starting in the back who would have a chance to get place differential points. We're going to want to do the same here. It doesn't necessarily mean we want to go as far with it as we did in Daytona, because equipment in Las Vegas will likely matter more here than it does in Daytona, and drivers starting the back are likely going to have lesser equipment. So I'm not necessarily going out of my way to target drivers starting, you know, 35th, like I did in Daytona, but if a good driver qualifies there, I absolutely will. So I think you need to make a judgment call based on what you see in practice, based on what you see in their current form, in their track history. Is this driver capable of getting a good finish despite starting in the back? If you can answer yes to that question, you want that driver on your team. But there will be drivers back there to whom the answer is no. So you want to avoid those guys and kind of just make a judgment call. Like, it's a tough way to phrase it. It's not as actionable as we'd like, but you know, you do have to kind of, you know, throw some common sense in there and ask yourself if that driver has the ability to finish well. So, like, let's say we get a good driver starting outside the top 20. Like, let's say, for instance, Joey Logano qualifies poorly like he did last week in Atlanta. I'm going to want to get a lot of him on my rosters. And based on the format for qualifying, I think we will get good drivers who start outside the front part of the pack because they may not get the best draft in qualifying. Those are the drivers to whom I will have the most exposure. And I think that you do want to target drivers who will get place differential while not going overboard, in the sense that you're not targeting bad equipment, but you can still target drivers at the front. When we discussed Daytona, you know, the line of thinking we used for tournaments was making assumptions. You assume who is going to win the race and then build from there. So, like, let's say you're building lineups, looking at practice speeds, and you love Brad Keselowski, but Brad Keselowski is starting third. You can still use Brad Keselowski under the assumption he wins that race. There are some laps to be led. You get 43 finishing points for a win. So you can use the person you assume wins no matter where they start. So I would likely, you know, start your lineup by making an assumption around who is going to win the race for tournaments specifically. You don't have to do that in cash games because you do want to target drivers further in the back there. But for tournaments, make that assumption around who you think is going to win. So you don't need to avoid the front entirely. But you can. If you assume that a driver starting 15th is going to win, you can fade the front entirely. And I would also avoid going too hard at drivers towards the front. Looking back at past races at Daytona and Talladega, it's pretty rare for more than two drivers who started in the top 10 to be among the five highest scoring drivers for the race, especially when you consider, you know, salaries and what you can actually afford. So I think I'm going to cap myself at two drivers starting towards the front per lineup, just because I think that I do want to get as much place differential as I can, and you can fade the front entirely. So vary your roster construction based on where drivers are starting, based on what qualifying gives you, but the general thought process is you want to pick the winner, and then you want to get drivers starting closer to the back who can get you some place differential points. Two other things to note here for Las Vegas based on this new aero package, I am likely going to have lower exposure to my favorite drivers for this weekend than I usually would because there's a lot of uncertainty there. Here, there is uncertainty because we don't know in reality how this new aero package will work, and practice may be a little bit tainted due to the drafting, and also there will be more crashes at Las Vegas than we've seen in the past because there will be tighter racing, and tighter racing leads to more issues. So I'm going to have lower exposure than I did to drivers last week in Atlanta. Like, I think I had 70% of one driver in one contest, and I might not go quite that hard this weekend. I'm still probably willing to go around 60% if a driver I like is starting towards the back, but it's not going to be quite as enthusiastic as I was about drivers in the race last weekend for Atlanta. I'm also more okay with punting than I usually would be. Because, as mentioned, this is going to, or I guess I didn't mention this, but like, this is going to make the competition tighter, meaning there should be a larger sample of cars that are capable of winning the race. And that is impactful for these lower salary drivers. You do not want to use a dud. Like, if there is a driver who has no chance of performing well, you don't want them on your roster. Joey Gase, for example, this week, probably don't want to go there. He's not going to do a whole lot for you in DFS, but you know, the guys are on $5,000. I think they're in play this week. And I think that I'd be willing to use them if they start poorly because this could make the competition a bit more even. And that would benefit them. So lower exposure, be willing to punt, target drivers towards the back, make your assumption lineups. And I think if you do all those things, you should be set up pretty well for a good Las Vegas weekend. We'll see if we need to adjust our line of thinking based on what happens in this race for future races in this aero package, but I think based on what we've seen in the All-Star race last year and the testing sessions, this is the way to go for this weekend. We'll get into our driver-by-driver salary breakdown in just 1 second, but first, for all you NBA DFS players, we got a brand new podcast here on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed just for you. It is the Daily ISO with Tom Vecchio. It'll go up every weekday morning, previewing that night's slate with a position-by-position breakdown. To check that out, make sure you get every episode right when it's posted. Subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. I listen to Wednesday's version with Tom today, getting set for my NBA lineups for tonight, so it was really good. Highly recommended PGA podcast there as well for the Honda Classic this weekend, so make sure you subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Let's do our tier-by-tier breakdown now of the drivers for this weekend, starting on at the top with Kevin Harvick, who is $14,500 on FanDuel. You got Brad Keselowski at 14K. Martin Truex Jr. is 13.5. Kyle Busch is 13.2. Joey Logano is 13.0. And then Kyle Larson is $12,800. And I think when you look at this tier, you could make a pretty strong case for anybody. There is a reason they're priced here, and I think that they're all very much in play. Keselowski, may be the guy who stands out the most. And that's weird, because if you've listened to this podcast, you know how much I love laps led. Keselowski has not led more than 100 laps in a race since last year in the spring race at Dover, but he is the most recent winner at Las Vegas, having won here in the fall, and the most recent winner in the Cup Series after his win last week in Atlanta. Keselowski has had a top six average running position in four straight races at Las Vegas and in six of the past seven. He has won three Las Vegas races in that time, and this is a key, he is also good on restrictor plates, which means he should adapt well to this new package. It's really hard for me to put Keselowski above Harvick because Harvick's laps led potential is always just so ginormous, but I think I may wind up doing so regardless. So we'll talk more about rankings later on, but Keselowski is a guy I really am interested in for this weekend. I also think Martin Truex Jr. is worth noting at $13,500 because even before he fully broke out and became the Martin Truex Jr. he is today, he was good at Las Vegas. He has led 96 or more laps in two of the past three races here. He won one of those back in 2017. He was fourth and third in the two races here last year, so he's a good racer at this track, and he finished second to Keselowski in Atlanta. So the reduced horsepower does play well for Martin Truex Jr. Truex tied Harvick for the best average running position in that race. He was crazy fast in practice, so Truex, I didn't know what to think about him coming into the year. I thought there was some potential for a step backward, given that he's on a new team. Did have his crew chief there, which is certainly encouraging, but he looked really good last week in Atlanta. So to me, it's kind of hard to rank this tier. Larson led 142 laps last week. He runs well in Vegas. Harvick won here last spring. Kyle Busch, hometown narrative. He was better last week than the numbers will show. But I think if you force me to pick a guy in this tier entering the weekend, I might go Keselowski by a hair over Kevin Harvick. But my thoughts on this tier will be heavily influenced by 10-lap averages in practice on Saturday, what the drivers are saying, and all that. So if you can watch practice, try to do so. I think it will be highly impactful for this race. And I am very willing to change my thoughts on this tier based on what I see in practice. Moving down to the second tier on FanDuel, that's Ryan Blaney at $12,000 through Eric Almirola at $10,000. Blaney, I thought I picked him to win last week in Atlanta. I did not. I was into him, though. Very into him for DFS. Talked about him on the podcast. Didn't finish well there. But that finish was super misleading. He started 26th in that race. He led 41 laps, which is really impressive when you start that deep in the order. And he also had an 8th place average running position. He just finished poorly due to some bad luck at the end. Blaney has finished 7th or better in each of the past four races at Las Vegas. He had a 3rd place average running position last year in the spring here. So when I look at this tier, the guys 12,000 through 10,000, Blaney is the most expensive in this tier, but I also think he is the best driver in this tier by a significant margin. So Blaney's going to win a race at a 1.5-mile track soon. And given the way that Penske has run, whether it be Logano, Keselowski, or Blaney at this track, it very well could be this weekend. So Ryan Blaney, always on my list, but especially so for this weekend. Chase Elliott's in this tier. He really struggled in Atlanta, and I think it is a pretty major point of concern because all the Hendrick cars had an average running position of 14th or worse. Chase was the best in that group, as we saw all last year, but he struggled to start the year at 1.5-mile tracks too. The places he really excelled were the flat, shorter tracks, and eventually their 1.5-mile program picked up at the end of the year, but it took a while. If we look at the drivers with a salary of $9,100 or higher, Chase Elliott had the worst average running position last week, and his salary is $11,000, so well above that. I am willing to change my opinion on Chase Elliott if he is fast in practice, but I do need to see that before I buy in when his salary is as high as it is. Even if he starts deep in the pack, given how high his salary is, I would want to see some speed in practice before I buy in, although he would be a good candidate for place differential if he were to start poorly again. Last week, Clint Bowyer and Eric Almirola, Stuart Haas Racing teammates, were both fast. They both had decent average running positions. That would put them on par. I would personally put them on par with Denny Hamlin, even though Hamlin is a bit more pricey. So I think that Hamlin, to me, but not, he's not overpriced, but I think that Boyer and Almirola are on his same level. So in this tier, I had Blaney in a tier by himself, then a gap, then Boyer, Almirola, and Hamlin in the same tier, and then Chase is just kind of hovering. If he's fast in practice, I will change my tune on him, but until I see that, I am a bit skeptical on Elliott. Now, last week I said the same thing about Kurt Busch as we moved down to the middle tier, but Kurt Busch was really good in Atlanta, and I have to change my opinion about him. This tier is Busch at 96 through Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at 78, and Busch was really impressive. I did expect him to struggle this year with Chip Ganassi Racing, but you saw Larson lead 142 laps. Busch ran up front all day long and had a sixth-place average running position, and he was also fast in practice. So I mentioned last week on the podcast that early in the year, we have to be able to change our opinions on drivers very quickly. I think I'm doing that with Kurt Busch based on what he did last week in Atlanta. He doesn't have a great track record in Vegas. It is his home track, but he has not been good here historically. But last week did a lot to shift my opinion on Kurt Busch. So personally, entirely changing my tune on Kurt Busch, I am very intrigued by him at this $9,600 price tag. I always love Erik Jones at $9,100. He had an 11th place average running position or better in two of his three career races at Las Vegas. Finished well last week, so I'd have him well ahead of Jimmy Johnson, who was just $400 cheaper. And I think that Jones and Kurt Busch are in a tier of their own in this salary range. A couple of quick notes on other guys in this tier, the three other guys outside of Johnson, Jones, and Busch. Ryan Newman finished 11th or better in both Vegas races last year. Those were his two best finishes on 1.5 mile tracks. He looked decent last week, was running around 13th or so most of the day. Both he and his teammate Stenhouse run well in restrictor plates. So Roush Fenway Racing struggled last year, but I could see them benefiting from the new aero package. So I'm not actively targeting Newman, but I think he is at least interesting based on what he did in Vegas last year and what he did last week in Atlanta. With Daniel Suarez, I think my interest in him really does revolve almost entirely around his performance last week. He had a 12th place average running position last week, which is the best among all drivers with a salary below $9,500 for this week, and Suarez is at 84. He finished 8th in Las Vegas last fall, so he can run on this track. So I think overall, this is a pretty good tier. I have Busch and Jones ranked the highest, but I put Suarez 3rd, then Newman and Stenhouse, and then likely Johnson last, unless he impresses in practice. Suarez, $8,000, not $8,400. Misspoke there, but Suarez still good value play at $8,000 based on what he did last week. The value plays this week are Paul Menard at $7,500 through Chris Buescher at $6,000. And Menard has always run well at Las Vegas despite having middling equipment. He had he's had a top 15 finish in 8 of the past 9 races here. He has 5 top 5s and one, or 5 top 10s, 1 top 5 in this span. He has always been good on restrictor plates, and he gets his equipment from Penske Racing. And as mentioned, guys like Logano, Keselowski, and Blaney have always been good here. So I think that Menard running well at Las Vegas makes sense, at least last year, given the fact that he was with Penske, or essentially with Penske then. So I think in this tier, Paul Menard is a really good high floor option at $7,500, assuming he does not start at the front. Menard has the floor. I think that Daniel Hemric in this tier has the upside. In his first two full-time races with Richard Childress Racing, Hemric has been underwhelming. He's finished 34th and 20th in the first two races. That's not great, but last week, you have to dig deeper. He had worked his way into the top five after starting in the low 20s before he cut down a tire late in the race. He made more passes last week than everybody except one driver, and that one driver was Kyle Busch, who started all the way in the back. That's impressive. Hemric was crazy fast in practice. I think his salary will be in the mid $8,000 before long. He is $7,000 this week. I'm going to be willing to accept a higher starting spot on Hemric than I would for other guys in this tier because I think the salary is very cheap for a guy who has the potential to get a top 10 finish. So I am buying Daniel Hemric at $7,000 and I'm going to be pretty flexible with him even if he doesn't qualify necessarily in an ideal spot. I'm not using if he starts top five, but like, you know, once we get, you know, to 11th, 12th, 13th, somewhere in there, I'd at least give him a sniff at that point. Chris Buescher is $6,000. I think he could be another guy, kind of like the Roush Fenway Racing guys, who benefits from the new rules package. Buescher has always been good on restrictor plates. He finished 9th last week. That is just his second career top 10 at a 1.5-mile track and his first since 2017. There was a bit of flukiness to it because Buescher wasn't super fast in practice, didn't have a great average running position, but I still think he's worth a look. So if he qualifies 30th again this weekend, I'll be very into him as a place differential guy at $6,000. Moving down to the punting tier, this is Ty Dillon at $5,500 on down, and it does include both David Ragan and Ryan Preece, who had good average running positions last week in Atlanta. Preece was pretty strong in Daytona as well, so I said in the track breakdown that I'd be more willing to punt now than I was previously. I think that you've got some decent options down here, so I want to list those guys, and we do need them to qualify poorly to use them. But if you get one of these guys starting 30th or lower, and they show some signs of life in practice, I would be okay with using them. That list is Ty Dillon, Michael McDowell, David Ragan, and Ryan Preece. So four different guys I think are at least in play. If they qualify poorly, I could potentially go with Bubba Wallace. He's a good restrictor plate driver. He is a good driver overall, but his equipment is butt. It's terrible. And I need to see speed in practice first. So, like Bubba the talent, don't like the equipment, and I want to see some form of speed in practice before I get too excited about using Bubba Wallace at $4,500. So again, need those five drivers to start towards the back to use them, but all could be viable if they do, and they get more viable if using them allows me to get additional upside with using a cheaper or a more expensive driver who is starting towards the back and can gobble up some place differential points. That is all we have for the tier-by-tier breakdown for this weekend, but before we jet off and send you out to Las Vegas, got to do the picks to win appropriate for Las Vegas, and normally I'll do one not as obvious pick above $10,000 and then one below $10,000. I'm going to go with the driver who is the most recent winner in the Cup Series and the most recent winner at Las Vegas. And that seems boring. It is boring to pick Brad Keselowski, but if you look at his William Hill odds to win for this week, he's 6-1. Kevin Harvick is 4-1. And you got Martin Truex Jr., who is +550. Keselowski, I think his odds should be shorter. So I'm going to pick Keselowski to win this weekend. It is boring. I acknowledge that, and I'm sorry, but I think that's the way to go, just based on the odds. If I look at someone below $10,000, I really, really was impressed with what Kurt Busch did last weekend and what Chip Ganassi Racing did overall last weekend. So Kurt Busch is 22-1 to win. I think those are good odds. I'd be willing to take those based on what happened last week. And I think that among the guys below 10,000, Busch is my favorite. Eric Jones, a close second there. If you want to get really weird, like if you actually want to put down a bet, I know this is not a betting pod, but Daniel Hemric is 125-1. That's really good for a guy. I've talked a lot about Daniel Hemric already, but I think that is justified based on what he did last year in the Xfinity Series, based on the fact that he has competent equipment, and based on how good he was last week. So to me, Hemric, from a pure betting perspective, would be my favorite pick for this weekend. That is all we have for this weekend in Las Vegas. I'm really excited to see the racing on the track this week and get some takeaways we can apply to future races for DFS. It'll be a learning experience for sure, and I will be wrong about some things, but I want to see where I'm wrong, and I want to see how I can adjust my thought process going forward based on what we see on the track on Saturday and on Sunday. If you have any questions for me about NASCAR DFS, you can hit me up on Twitter. I am at Jim Sannes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. Once again, quick reminder to subscribe to get the daily ISO every day for NBA DFS with Tom Vecchio, and also our PGA podcast, myself and Brandon Gadula, that go up every Tuesday. Subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Enjoy the racing this weekend. I'm excited to see how things go down. We'll recap it all next week and get you set for the next race as well. But overall, enjoy the racing and good luck with your lineups. We'll talk to you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.